This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor of WorldSweeper.com and the executive director of the World Sweeping Association. I'm pleased today to have Dan Earle on the phone with me. Dan is the owner of Apex Maintenance Services, LLC. They're located in Jacksonville, Florida. And this is a quite unusual story in that Dan had another company that was much larger that he owned, founded, expanded, and so forth before he got into this business. And I'm going to let him tell you about that. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
Dan, let's talk about, before you got started in sweeping, talk about the business you had before, and then you sold it, and it was very successful, and then ultimately got into sweeping. But I think that that's an interesting story in that that turned into be quite a large business with all the things that go along with large businesses that you had to be doing. Let's start out there or wherever you'd like, but let's talk about that a little bit, and then we'll move into sweeping from there.
Sure. So you know those signs on the highway that say all trucks enter scales?
Yes.
All trains have to go through scales also. And lots of people have scales. The coal company has a scale because they want to know how much coal they're going to be selling and how heavy it is. The electric company has a scale because they don't trust the coal company and they want their own scale to know how much coal they're buying and how much it's going to cost them. And then the railroad has a scale because they want to know how much coal they're pulling. If you're only pulling a little bit of coal, you only need one locomotive to get over the mountain. If it's a heavier load, you need two locomotives to get over the mountain. The buyer, seller, and the transporter all have scales, and those scales have to be checked and certified on a regular basis in order to be used for revenue-generating reasons. So typically, those scales are tested with rail-bound test units. I found a way to take those test units and rebuild them and put them on the back of semi-trucks, and rather than having a locomotive take a scale test car in, which they are not in the business of doing and are not very good at doing, to just drive semi-trucks in. And it's kind of like a Volkswagen Bug. You take a big crane and you lift off this cart and you put it on the track, and then you fill it exactly full with 80,000 pounds. You put it on the scale. Does it read 80,000? Take it off. Does it go back to zero? And it's, in a simplistic sense, that's all you do. And put a program together and put trucks together and design trucks, and serving Montreal to Miami east of the Mississippi for about 5 years, and then I grew from California to New York also, and started running semis all over the country testing railroad scales. Good business. I liked it.
That's a niche business that looks so much similar to sweeping that nobody would even, think about.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. But it's up my alley. It's blue collar. We have big trucks, diesel trucks, and we're working around railroads, and I liked it. I just didn't like the travel. And so after a number of years, I found a couple people who were interested in buying it and sold it to one of them. And I actually retired for a number of years. I found retirement was very boring. I was probably about 35, 36. And so I wanted to find a new business, but I wanted one that was local, one that was home. I didn't want to travel. My kids are bigger now, but I had younger children, and I didn't want to be gone during the day. So I started looking for stuff that was blue-collar, working with big diesel trucks, and at night. And, hey, who goes out at night? Sweeping trucks go out at night. And it was right up my alley. So that's how I ended up in parking lot sweeping, because it suited what I needed.
Well, and what year was that you started Apex Maintenance Services?
I purchased Apex Maintenance.
Ah.
It was called a different company. It was called Bill's Lawn Care and Maintenance at the time. And I purchased it. It's been about 6-7 years ago now. And it included lawn care, and it had a couple sweeping trucks and a number of contracts. And so I purchased a turnkey. I purchased the whole thing. And I didn't actually start this one.
It makes sense to do that, since you wouldn't have known anything about it, and you weren't bringing a competitive advantage of information to it.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So you're in Jacksonville, Florida, and that market is certainly a little different market than what a lot of people are in. What are the major challenges in picking up? It strikes me that you have a particular type of debris down there just because there's so much sand, I would think. And then also I know there's a lot of fluctuation between winter and summer with how many people are there, so forth. I don't know what that does to, in terms of being able to find the right employees, or, you know, how much business has changed from the winter to the summer months and that sort of thing. Talk about how the business is in general, if you would, a little.
I don't know about other areas of the country, but I don't find that the debris that we pick up is really unique. But what is unique and is that we have a heavy leaf season. And we plant a lot of trees because we want shade in the summertime. And those oak trees, they drop leaves from about November through May. And my man hours, will almost double during those months because of the leaf pickup. Many of our customers will go from maybe 10 hours of sweeping a month to 10 hours of sweeping a week and during those months. And we have numerous customers that do that. So I find that it is a challenge in the leaf time, in the winter time, picking up leaves. Not so much the number of people in town, the number of people, or really other than that, it's just really the leaves that just eat us alive. We work hard during the leaf season. And then we get summers off.
Relatively speaking, right.
Relatively speaking. I want my employees to be working all the time. And I'm a small company. I've had chances to grow numerous times. I've had companies come to me and ask me to take 30, 40 jobs, and I don't want it. I'm very comfortable with the size I am. We have 4 employees, and I really don't want to get any bigger than that. We run at about 97% capacity, and that just works for me. If I get bigger, it just makes more headaches.
So, how do you supplement what work is done then in the summer months for your employees? What kinds of things do they do that you must have to expand that in the winter months, but then when you come down to the summer months, the 4 employees you say are at 97%, is that sweeping, maintenance? What kinds of things are taking up their time?
During the winter time, we do almost all parking lot sweeping and portering. I mean, the trucks are running all night long, all Saturday, all Sunday, just running around the clock on the weekends. During the summertime months, that's when we go out and we pour pressure washing. We'll pick up sidewalks, and we'll do 20 hours of sidewalks a week during the summer months. And I don't refuse to do them during the winter months, but I push them off until the summer months. So pressure washing is a big one, and we started picking up floor scrubbing inside of the buildings. We do probably 60 to 70% of our business is warehouse and large warehouses. That's kind of where our niche has grown. I found that the profit margins in retail shopping centers, it's just not worth my time nor my hassle. And so when I bought the company, we were doing 9 Walmarts. Within 6 months, I'd given them all up because they weren't profitable. And I'm not going to sweep if it's not profitable. We were doing multiple shopping centers, and I just gave them all up because they're not profitable. Whereas the warehouses seem to have a higher profit margin. They're not 7 nights a week. They are twice a month. But that's okay. I would rather make as much money working twice a month as I do 7 nights a week. So we do a lot of inside floor scrubbing, maybe 10 hours a week during the summer months. So between my pressure washing and my floor scrubbing, I'm able to pick up 30 to 40 hours every week just doing those two things. And that really helps keep the guys running.
Yeah, well, that's one of the areas that I think more sweeping contractors should think about is interior of warehouses and industrial buildings and so forth. Maintenance. And it seems like so many of them think to go bigger, to go street sweeping, which is a whole different category of sweeping. I mean, you're going from night to day, you're going from $80,000, $90,000 machines to over $250,000 for a machine, a long payback period, a long gestation period after you try to sweep streets and work with cities over the course of a year or two to finally get a contract, and now you have it and you don't really know much about it. And it's you know, usually a commitment for X number of years, and if you goof up, you know you lose it, and it can be real expensive. Where it seems like getting into warehouse sweeping, let's say we'll call it that, it's really scrubbing and so forth, makes a lot more sense because you can sort of learn on the job, and all your eggs aren't in, you know, one of those street sweeping baskets. What's the typical way that you would clean an industrial building? I mean, what kind of equipment does that call for, and what kind of manpower and that kind of thing have you found?
Inside or out?
Let's talk about inside. Now, outside, that's pretty standard, isn't it? Day porter, sweeping services, clean the areas around, maybe the sidewalks, the entrances, those kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The inside is just like sweeping the outside. We purchased a tenant floor scrubber, got some specific brushes for the front of it, and we purchased just a chemical from Home Depot that is fairly inexpensive. And it's just like you plug it in and let it charge up, and it'll run for about 8 hours. And so you get these big warehouses that are 25,000 to 50,000 square feet. Would it be quicker to get one of the ride-on ones that have a Ford motor in them? Sure, but now you're into tens of thousands of dollars. And my goal is to keep my employees working. So, you know, you do a 60 to 100,000 square foot place, and it will take you 5 8-hour days. And each night the machine charges back up, and the next day my guy's busy for 8 hours. So I'm not trying to do it quickly. If you want to do it quickly, get a bigger riding machine, but now you're into a whole different business plan. You're kind of like going to street sweeping.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have a small, well, it's 36-inch tenant floor scrubber. Again, if I'm trying to do it quickly and I'm trying to do lots of these, yeah, a riding one would be better, but this little one is great. It paid for itself within the first 5 jobs, and we do dozens and dozens and dozens of jobs with it. So it's very, very profitable. I mean, very profitable.
That makes perfect sense. And do you have enough fall off from those businesses that you have to keep going out and continually getting them, or is that a repeat business that you can count on, over the course of a year?
The floor scrubbing or the
The floor scrubbing.
Most of my customers have floors like that, and so whenever a tenant vacates, they get them scrubbed. And I've talked with my customers and let them know that, hey, yes, we're going to sweep you less during the summertime, but I need help picking that up. So they kind of let their inside floors back up and build up. Now, if they need one done during the wintertime, I'll go do it. But they let those pile up, and then as soon as they know I'm free, it's like, okay, we've got all these floors we need to get done that we've been waiting for about 4 months to get done.
So it's communication with your customers is everything in terms of that.
Yes,
it's a job that doesn't have a critical time frame. It's not like a gallon of milk that's going to go bad, in a week or two. It's just that they're building up, and they can wait to get the job done right. And they like working with you.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Because there's a lot. I don't know what the vacancy rate is for warehouses, but some of these warehouses sit empty for long periods of time. And they have us go in every year and clean them because they get dusty. So some of them have been empty for 3 seasons in a row, and every summer we go in and clean the floor for 2 weeks.
And is that just so they can hopefully rent it or lease it out?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Keep it looking good. And do you do anything else when somebody goes out of a building? Will you go in and do any kind of repair or moving equipment out or any of that stuff?
No, I don't. I keep my guys portering and sweeping most of the time. We do car stops, you know, those things that you pull up to. I'll replace those out in the parking lot. But we did windows for a while, but that's not my business. I'm not in the window business. So I got rid of that. And, yeah, we tried janitorial for about a 6-month period, and I said, I'm not in the janitorial business. So I got out of that. I kind of keep having to go back to my business plan.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it small, keeping it concise. I do the inside floors because it offsets my winter time high season.
Mm-hmm. Like many people do in the snow belt, where they do snow plowing, or that's snow abatement.
Yes.
In the winter when they can't run their sweepers, and that's a completely different and I think outstanding business model to do that.
Yes. Well, when I bought the company, we did lawn care work, and the lawn care work picks up heavy in the summertime. And that was the original plan, was to put my sweeping guys into lawn care during the summertime. And then when the lawns all die during the wintertime, you bring them over into sweeping. I just found working all night sweeping and then all day long lawn care, I just wasn't interested in working that many hours. It was too many hours. And I don't want to hire middle management. I don't want to go that big. I want to keep my company small, so I sold my lawn care side of my company. Just because I don't want to go bigger.
Well, you know, when I'm listening to this, the philosophy of that I really like, because there's so many people out there that all they can think of is bigger, rather than finding a profitable niche that works for them, that provides for their family, and just works, that they're not having to go to the low dollar accounts, which doesn't make sense. I understand completely what you're saying about the retail sector that has been so goofed up now, with especially with third party vendors and with hungry contractors going in and trying to, race to the bottom with their underbidding without even recognition of expenses. There are so many people that out there, I'm sorry to say, that would say, well, we have 9 Walmarts or whatever the number was you said, and we've got to do whatever we can to keep that volume. But they don't recognize that that's the low profit volume that they have. And it's so valuable to recognize where your higher profit areas are that keep your customers happy, and know which customers, or in your cases, which segments of the business to fire, essentially. I mean, yes, you sold off your lawn maintenance side, and that's what you should always do if you can, but to recognize that some segments aren't working as well as other segments, and so, getting rid of one and moving further into the other just makes so much sense.
Well, I have found that bigger isn't better unless it's more profitable. And I just because you're larger, you're making more money. I mean, your expenses go up. Now you have bigger overhead, and you have a middle manager that you have to keep employed. So I find that with this business anyway, not with my prior business, but with this business, I have decided to focus strictly on parking lot sweeping, and car stops are profitable. You know, if a customer asks me to clean out a warehouse, like let's say a tenant vacates and they need a warehouse cleaned out, if my guys are available, I'm happy to send them out there and with, a big dump trailer, and they'll clean it out. But that's not our primary business.
Sure, you can evaluate something, a customer request, and see if you can handle it, and you do. So
yeah, and I try and handle it. I know all of my customers personally. When I bought the company, within the first year I had ended, I'm going to say 60% of my contracts that I bought, and since then I've put in new contracts, and I'm not interested in growing bigger, and I don't lose contracts. We stay with our customers stay with us for a long time. We just don't have a lot of turnover of employees or customers. We just kind of stay where we are, and it's nice. It's very nice.
Well, that is very nice. That's a stability that a lot of contractors could only wish for, and I think because they tend into the retail sector, that's a stability that is always out of their grasp. Something keeps coming along that upsets the apple cart. And the third-party vendor situation especially, what's happening there is sort of like what had happened previously, where under-informed contractors would come in and think the only way they can get a job is to underbid whatever the other guy is doing. So that kind of races to the bottom, rather than saying, to the retail customer, I've looked around your lot, and the person that's doing the job is not doing it. And here's what it takes, and that may be more than what you're paying to do the job right, but you want to keep your customers, and here's the value of sweeping, and here's the value of having people look at your lot and want to shop at your store, and you know, so forth. So now what's happened is third-party vendors have come in and promised the moon to these different retailers, and then although the service might drop off, and they may even fire their third-party vendor, or in favor of another one who re-promises the moon at even a lesser price than the one before. What so often happens, even if they move away from a third-party vendor, is you never go back up to realistic pricing that actually gets the job done and does it well. That's
yes,
a difficulty.
Yes and no. I mean, I deal with two third-party vendors, and I keep my footprint fairly small with my third-party vendors. I don't want to be heavy into them. I've been offered multiple jobs with each of them, and I wanted a small piece of my portfolio of customers, and I'm okay with them. I mean, I bid them up my price, and I told them that was my price, and, you know, they would go with somebody else, and then they would go with somebody else, and after about a year and a half, 2 years, they'd come and say, okay, well, we'll try you, and I've stayed with them for a long time. I think it's who you personally get, and as long as you hold your price. As soon as you start dropping your price on the third-party vendors, you get hurt.
Right.
But as long as you hold your price, I have two of them that I'm very comfortable with. I like both of them. I don't know the people personally, but I talk to them at least monthly on the phone. My contact at each place. And
do you want to say who those are?
Well, one's a local one called Citywide,
mm-hmm.
and believe it or not, hold on, USM.
Uh huh.
Now I don't do any Walmarts with USM. They screwed up that whole Walmart thing. But I do two jobs for USM, and my one contact there is just brilliant. She's great, and they pay well, and it's probably 60% of my landlords are out of town. Many of them are out of town, so I like it. It works really well.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I understand the downside to third party vendors, and I understand what's happened, but as long as you hold your price. And now I price my jobs differently. I don't know if you want to move on to that.
Sure, let's talk about that. Glad to.
I price my jobs based upon time. And I don't go to my customers when I bid a job and say, yeah, I will keep your parking lot clean for X dollars per month. I give them a cost per service, and I estimate how long it'll take to do the job, and I've gotten pretty good at estimating the length of the job. And I say, we will be on your property for X minutes every service. Now, in 30 days, we find that we can't get you to your satisfaction level with that many minutes, then we're going to have to up the minutes, which will up the cost. If I can do it quicker than that, and I've done this multiple times, I'm happy to lower my cost and do it in fewer minutes. But I bid it per time on job, on average, on a monthly average. I don't do it, you know, every single time we have to walk away after 45 minutes if we're going to be there an hour. But within that week, I better have some half hours on that same job site. And that way my customer knows that I will be on their job site for 2 hours every week. Every Monday for 2 hours, I will be on your job site because that's what you're paying for. And I find that works. They're comfortable knowing what they're paying for. And if it doesn't get cleaned and they're not happy with it, it's a simple conversation. I agree with you. It's not getting clean. We need more than 2 hours. This job takes 2 hours and 30 minutes to do. And then we can decide whether it's worth their cost to go up to 2.5 hours. And I'm just real open with my customers. I tell them, this is what I charge per hour, depending upon... My rates per hour change, you know, obviously depending on the kind of property, where it is, how often we sweep it and stuff like that. But we just do it per hour. And this is how many hours I think it'll take, and this is what I'll charge you. And it works. It makes it really open. I never promise that, yeah, I can clean your parking lot and then hope that it takes me less time. And it helps me with my scheduling my employees, too, because I know exactly how long, you know, when I have my schedule built, I know how long each job is, and so I can build up my hours to where I know how long they're going to be out for.
So how does that work with a third-party vendor when they want a fixed price?
Exactly the same thing. Third-party vendor, yes, I can sweep this property. It's going to take me 45 minutes to sweep it, and you want it swept 3 nights a week, I'll sweep 3 nights a week, 45 minutes each, and this is my price. They don't really care about the time, third-party vendors. They're just looking at the money. But I keep records. My guys sign in and out of every property. I know exactly how many minutes I spend on your property. So if you want to ask me how many minutes I spent on your property 6 months ago, I can tell you. You know, and it will be 45 on average if that's what you're paying for. And I can tell you when we got there and when we left, how many bags we changed. And there's photographs taken almost of every property every night. Yeah, we
can. And how do you deal with the photographs? What do you do with those?
They just email them into the office, and they're just dated and put into a file for each customer. So if a tenant complains to an out of town property manager and says, "Hey, my place was messy, and you need to do a better job of cleaning it," I can shoot them back photographs from last week when we were there. 2 days before. Say, well, 2 days before, we did sweep it, and here's what it looked like. Now, yes, it could very well have gotten dirty after we left. Let me go take a look at it for you and see what's going on. But nope, it just eliminates all of the arguments.
Mm-hmm.
It just eliminates the unhappiness. And it's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, clearly it was clean when you were there 2 days prior, and obviously, and then I'll go and I'll take pictures and send them to him and say, yeah, your tenant is correct. It's a pigsty. You know, somebody dumped a bag of trash out back, or the wind blew something. Yes,
but
you're correct, property manager. But
yeah,
we did our job. We were there from 2:20 a.m. to 3:05, just like, you know.
Well, that technology is one of those that is just advanced so much to where storage is essentially free these days for things like photos, and it's really just developing a system that will work for you in terms of, you know, putting that onto kind of a fourth gear method of really getting the job done in terms of the employees know how to take the pictures, they know what to do with them, they et cetera, and then you.
Plus, the phones all have GPS tracking in them, so you know, even if they don't trust my written documents of when we were there, we have it in the GPS on the phone, so we can show you we were on site. Well, at least the truck was on site from 2:20 a.m. to 3:05. It just eliminates the discussion of am I getting what I pay for? I feel like I'm getting ripped off. And yeah, you are getting what you pay for. We're on your side, property manager. We want to get it clean, but help your tenant learn that it's not going to be clean all the time.
Right, and that's part of it too. Again, we're going back to communication and how that can work, and to everybody's favor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
You're doing this not with GPS, but with a sign-in sheets.
Guys have a little. Every night they pick up their piece of paper that has their schedule, and it doesn't change much. I mean, they know their schedules, and they write down their mileage when they leave. They write down their, the time, they write down everything, and every job they just sign in and sign out of on the paper. And yeah, it should be done electronically with laptops, but my sweeping guys aren't at that point where they're comfortable with Excel spreadsheets and emailing them in and breaking laptops. So we just do it paper-wise, and it is what it is.
Well, if it's working for you, I think that's the key, and you're not doing all that many. Now let's talk about what you have done with sweepers. What is it that you use today? And I understand that you experimented at building your own sweeper at one point as well.
Yeah. Well, we had a Victory. I bought the company with a Victory 2, I think it was, on an NPR. And that one I sold because it was relatively new and it was worth a lot of money and it was depreciating very quickly. And I looked at my depreciation schedule on it, and I looked at the value of it in 5 years. It just wasn't worth it to me. I was losing too much money on it. So I sold it while it was worth, I think, a sold it for $55,000. It was a couple years old. And I bought a much older Nighthawk 400, again, on an NPR. I like the single engine because cost of ownership is less. You don't have the extra fuel for the pony motor. You don't have the maintenance and upkeep on a pony motor. Do they work as well as a pony-motored machine? Probably not, but I don't profess to pick up road debris. I only pick up paper and leaves, and a Nighthawk works perfect for that. Plus, they're quieter, and we do sweep, you know, some places where there are residential houses close. And so we use the Nighthawk. At one point, we had two Nighthawks running, and they were both really good. But I couldn't get into parking garages with the Nighthawk. So I bought a... do you remember the old Schwartz 222s? They were on the little Toyota dualies?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let me re-break in to say that the Schwartz 222s were one of those venerable machines. There's two venerable machines that I see in the industry. One was the Schwartz 222 on the Toyota chassis, and the other one is the Elgin Mobile that people still keep trying to keep them up from the 70s, and there's a lot of people still running those. But people love that machine.
Well, I saw one, and man, I really wanted it, but I couldn't find one in any kind of condition to purchase. So I bought a Toyota truck motorhome, which is the same thing. It's a little dually Toyota truck from the late 80s. Mine's an 89. Took the motorhome off of it, cut the frame, shortened it down, shortened the drive shaft down, not a big deal. And I bought one of those Schwartz polyurethane slide-in sweepers.
Yeah, the polyvac is what they used to be called. I'm not sure what it's called these days.
But they, I mean, the hopper itself, one person can lift up. It's more awkward than it is heavy. I mean, it's maybe 80 pounds. Anyway, so I shortened my wheelbase on my motorhome, and I built my own little Schwartz 222. But it's not a 222. It worked. And so I use a polyurethane hopper, you know, the slide-in hopper. And it dumps. I put a hydraulic dumper on it, and I tell you, that little thing has 14-inch tires that cost me $68 a piece. I get about 33, 34 miles a gallon. The motorhome only had 32,000 miles on it, and it was a little V6.
Uh-huh.
So cost of ownership, cost of operation on that little sweeper is about one-fifth of my victory. About one fourth of my Nighthawk. It doesn't cost anything to operate because it doesn't weigh anything. It's dead light, and I didn't use the sweeping style that hopper had, which was at the back. I moved it underneath it, in between the front wheels and the back wheels, like the big trucks are. I built it with all stainless steel stuff on it, so it's never going to rust on me, and the polyurethane hopper isn't going to, I mean, I guess it could crack someday, but you can get those things used off Craigslist all day long.
Sure.
It's just dirt cheap. It cost me nothing to operate that, and from that, we started moving into parking garages, and we'd sweep probably 20 hours a week, just parking garages. And it's a great little truck. It's so cheap to operate. Whereas the big trucks, you know, your tires, you have to calculate how much your tires are going to cost.
Sure, absolutely. It's all
that
cost.
That little truck, yeah. They're only $68 a piece, so scrub away.
And you can get enough in your capacity. That part works as well?
Well, it doesn't work during the leaf season. We do not. That truck parks during the leaf season except for the parking garages. It doesn't go out and do lots, because you are correct. It'll fill with leaves very, very quickly. I don't know how many yards capacity it is. I'm going to assume 1.5, maybe 2 yards.
Right. It's in that ballpark, certainly.
So but when you're just picking up paper and cigarette butts, you can sweep a lot of parking lots until you get 2 yards of paper and cigarette butts.
Right, and they're not going to weigh that much when you have them. It's if there's not sand and that sort of grit is not an issue.
No, and it dumps into a regular dumpster. It has a 61 inch dump height, so I'm 1 inch above a 60 inch dumpster. And it does. I mean, it's not as convenient as the Nighthawks and stuff because you have to once you dump, you have to go back and manually open those doors, whereas you know the big sweeper just dumps on its own. But yeah, it doesn't matter for the few seconds it takes to do that. It's no big deal.
Well, that's it. And I think a lot of people need to think about those kinds of economies of scale as well. The face of the parking lot industry is just changing. And I encourage contractors to really recognize that and to understand it, that, you know, especially with pricing going down, so in many cases frequency has changed as well. And find the machine or types of machines that work, and it may not be the same sweeper on the same route every day during a week or during, you know, the month. It may be that you once a week you have to do something else with a bigger sweeper or something like that, or maybe it's not all that often you can get away with a smaller, less powerful sweeper. But that's part of what your job is as a business owner, to figure that out and to know your costs of these different machines. And I think I found that very refreshing that you looked at this fairly new high-powered sweeper you didn't need and recognized as a new business owner that was one of the big assets you bought, right? When we go back to how you got into this, you bought an existing sweeping company, Bill's Sweeping. You, within the first year, you've gotten rid of probably the biggest dollar asset value of it because you recognize that, which is the big twin-engine sweeper. And by the end of the year, you've gotten rid of about 60% of the clients that you had purchased with your hard-earned money as part of what the purchase price was for this business. So
but
recognizing
that. But I kept the good customers.
Yeah, but you kept the good customers. Profitable. It's not like you drew them out of a hat.
Right.
To see which customers you're going to fire. And I'm sure that you didn't just fire them. You no doubt said, this isn't working and here's why and here's what I'd need. And, not recognizing anything but low bid, they probably went out to low bid and their places looked just the way they did before. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's the only way to make it profitable. You have to look at your expenses and your income and maximize your income and reduce your expenses.
Yeah, that's
I found getting a less expensive truck was just the right thing to do. I just couldn't handle buying a $55,000 truck and 5 years later having it be worth 20. I kind of depreciate. I mean, it just
if somebody didn't run it into a phone pole in the meantime.
Yeah, well, that's why you carry lots of insurance, right?
That's right.
But no, the little truck runs all summer long. It runs, 18 to 20 hours a day all summer long. It's a happy little truck, and I park my Nighthawks as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the wintertime, when the leaves are falling, the little truck just doesn't suit the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the little truck is fine in my retail jobs, like the grocery stores and stuff, because they don't get a lot of leaves. They mostly just have trash. So in the wintertime, I'll send it into the few of those that I have left. But I am slowly whittling that down, and as I get contracts of the big office buildings and commercial jobs, I give my 30-day notice on my retail jobs.
And that's an interesting part, too, when you're not looking to expand, and I think a lot of people are, in that other category, by far the majority, where when they get this new job, now they have to figure out how they can expand their routes, what machine they should buy as a route expansion machine, and are we going to really be able to keep the routes? We don't know for sure, so how much money do we buy with a new machine to do the new routes? And then we have to keep re-expanding that route to get it to where it's profitable, because probably at the point you're having to buy a machine for the expansion, it's not a profitable route.
It's a vicious cycle, isn't it?
It is.
It's just horrible, and we all get to that. I've toyed. Should I put on another truck? I'm getting enough offers for decent routes. Do
Do I buy another truck, get another employee? And you can't get a full-time employee at first, but, you know, if you get a part-time, then what do? Fire them after 6 months when you get full-time? Or, yeah, there are tough decisions about growing. I'm very comfortable at not growing. I think the right way, the way I would grow, if I were to grow the company, is I'd buy out a competitor. You know, buy it out and then buy out their five routes and then go through all their five routes and their five trucks and pick out the two best trucks and two routes worth of equipment and let the other stuff go and then have two profitable routes with two good pieces of equipment.
Well, you make it sound a lot like playing gin rummy or hearts or something, where you see the cards in your hand and you take the ones that you think are the least potential and you get rid of those, and pretty soon you have a winning hand. And it sounds certainly like Apex Maintenance has a winning hand in terms of not only the owner's direction of travel and your knowledge of how to do this, but also in the customers that it's serving and the market share that it serves.
Well, there's another reason to stay small. I've got an exit strategy on this business. I don't plan on sweeping for the rest of my life. I love the business. It's right up my alley. I'm home all day long. It's during the night when I much prefer to work, and it's a perfect business for me, and I've got great employees who have been with me for years and years and years, but I'm not going to do it forever. So when I go to sell the company, it's a lot easier to sell a four-employee company than it is to sell I've got nine routes and 10 trucks, of which three of them work and the other ones don't work, and, you know, we're making all this money. It's just easier to sell a smaller profit. You have more buyers when you have a smaller company, and especially a very profitable company. It's easier to sell a small, profitable company than a big, marginal company. And I'm going to sell the company eventually, but not within, I still have another 5-6 years till I sell it, but I don't want to get big because I get fewer buyers if I go big.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I'm small...
Well, it's like in terms of profitability, too. At the point where you grow to where you need a middle manager, supervisor, whatever you want to call him, then now that particular position doesn't pay for itself initially either. So you have to expand beyond that a couple more routes. So that's quite a commitment, as well. And if you're at a point where you're able to keep your quality control consistent at the way that you want it without having that extra supervisor there, mm-hmm. and of course then there's more accounting and so forth mm-hmm. too.
I like it the size it is. Sometimes I think of, rather than hiring another sweeper, I should just hire a paperwork person because I do it way too much paperwork than I like. I want to be able to sell it. So I don't want to get it so big that I have to find somebody who has millions of dollars to buy it. It works for me. I just like it small. I like my guys. I like my customers. I like my equipment. And it just works. We're a profitable sweeping company. We're not going to be out of business next week or next month or next year. And do we have harder times than others? Sure, but I'm not in the business of sweeping for free.
Dovetailing in with your philosophy of staying small in terms of the number of customers and so forth that you can handle without a middle manager and that we've been talking about, you also have a philosophy that is sort of similar that covers the amount of services one might branch out to, because I know you also get a lot of requests to do side jobs here, there, and elsewhere. Talk about your philosophy of that a little bit, too, because I think that goes hand in hand with what we've been talking about and is certainly another side of the coin to consider.
Sure. I'm a believer of a business plan. I mean, before I bought this company, I wrote a detailed, it's about 65, 70-page long business plan. Everything under the sun. I had it reviewed by a couple of my friends who have businesses. I put a lot of work into my business plans. Every business I've owned, I've done that. I go back to my business plan a lot. At one point, customers were asking, well, why don't you wash my windows? Well, why don't you stripe my parking lot? And so I go look at striping. It's only going to cost this much, and maybe I go back to my business
Did my business plan include those things? It didn't. If I want to include those things, I have to write a business plan for it. Figure out if it's profitable. Figure out how to make money in the paving business. And then if it works out, you get a good business plan, fine, go into it. Otherwise, stick with what you know best, which in my case is parking lot sweeping and portering. I find that if you start to try to be a jack of all trades, it just doesn't work for me. I find it better to stick with what you're good at, be the best person you can at it, and your customers will thank you for it. I mean, I have an association with a pressure washing guy now who does, you know, walls, and he does awnings, and he does all that stuff, and I just refer all the work to him, and it's because I don't do awnings, and I don't do walls. I mean, we tried it, then I went back to my business plan and said, nope, that's not my business. I'm not a pressure washing guy. Will I do your sidewalks for you? Yeah, because that's pretty safe. I can't hurt too much with that. But I think a business plan and going back to what you're good at, and if you want to expand, fine, write a business plan for it. And then if your business plan ferrets out that it's a good thing to go into striping parking lots, have at it. But put the work in. I guess that's what I would say about that.
And don't just knee-jerk make a decision because this guy's, got a big parking lot and you can stripe it.
Never. Yeah. Never. I mean, now when I say business plan, I'm talking about, it takes me about 4 months to write a good, solid plan. And if I do want to get in, like when I did decide to do sidewalks, I modified my business plan to, and I did all the research. How much can I make for it? How much is my equipment going to cost? Do I need insurance for it? What are the complaints going to be? How can I grow this part? Do I want to grow it? Is it profitable enough for me? Who are my customers? How am I going to get all of that stuff? And when I was all done, there was enough of a market and there was enough of a profit margin, and it was a good business sense to do sidewalks, but not awnings, and not sides of buildings, and not windows. You have to do a business plan. And then stick to it. Go back and reread it. Am I on target? Am I making money? Why not? What's wrong? If you haven't picked that up, I mean, my guys write down when they're in places. I know how many minutes we're on every job, and I'm a little bit strong on that side.
Well, that's a very good area of a business to be strong on, because there are so many people out there that are just not recognizing what their actual costs are and knowing, you know, how to price so that they can make money and wanting extra business so much that they'll lower their pants to get it. It's a syndrome you have to get out of. You can't afford to have that in your business, and there's way too much of it going on. And when we go back to third-party vendors, third-party vendor system should actually work just fine, but you have to, when you're approached by those people, to recognize the pitfalls, recognize the different areas where you may not get paid. I mean, you never know when a client isn't going to pay you. That's a part of business, and you try to avoid it as much as you can. But some of these guys, it's sort of built into their business model. However, if it built into your pricing is the recognition of all of those factors, and you're able to say from an educated point of view, this is the price that I need to have for that property, and you stick to it, then no problem.
And if you don't get it, it's okay. If you didn't want it, you don't shoot for the moon and you don't try and have a few properties that you're just making boatloads of money on, because that's not right either. Just make a good profit on every job and you're okay. I think some people say, well, I've got this one job that I'm making lots and lots of money on, so I'll just try and get five more jobs right around it that don't make any money just so that we make a little bit more. It doesn't work.
No,
then you lose that profitable job, and then you're stuck with these five little jobs that don't make any money.
That's exactly right. Well summed. Is there anything else we should talk about that you think is integral to your business model, your business plan, and how you operate that you think we haven't discussed?
Well, I think it's just important to clarify that the way that I do it isn't the right way or the only way. I mean, there are multiple ways to run these businesses. It's just the way that I do it and that I like to do it. And I have other friends in the sweeping business who have three times the size of me and lots of middle managers, and that's how they choose to run it. And it's not a bad model. It's just different from mine. So I don't want to come across as growing is bad, big is bad, you know, the nice new trucks are bad. It's just not how I choose to run my business.
Well, I think that's fine, and it's a refreshing alternative viewpoint that I think will have many of the contractors that have listened to this podcast be thinking. It's a thought-provoking concept, and I really appreciate that part of it.
So, I mean, if we can make more money per employee, wouldn't we rather have fewer employees? And that's how I look at it. I'd rather have fewer employees that make lots of money each than a lot of employees that each just make a little bit of money for me.
Well, I think that makes perfect sense, and if it makes sense to you to have that be the place we leave it, why don't we leave
sure.
it there?
I heard somebody say once, if I can get rid of my customers, vendors, and employees, it would be the perfect business. Not much of a business, so we got to have them all.
Unfortunately, that's the case. Or fortunately, perhaps.
Absolutely. Keep the prices up. Don't lowball so bad that it just becomes ridiculous. I feel bad for these sweeping companies who are getting paid nothing to sweep some of these parking lots. It's just, it's nuts. It's a shame. And these are good people working hard, trying to make a living, and it's just, you can't sweep a Walmart for $25.
Right.
You just can't. I mean, I don't care who you are, you can't. And so don't do it. Just stop doing them. I mean, there's enough work out there for everybody that we can all be profitable if we just all realize that $25 for a Walmart isn't profitable.
I couldn't agree more. We've been speaking with Dan Earle, and Dan is the owner of Apex Maintenance Services, LLC. They're located in Jacksonville, Florida. And I really appreciate the refreshing and certainly insightful viewpoints that you've brought to this podcast, Dan. I'm very happy to have Apex as our featured contractor of the month of June 2015. Thanks very much.
Thank you.